Hello, kids. Welcome back. I am writing to you on... Writing to you. Whatever. April 23rd. It's April 23rd. It's spring, finally, in southern Ontario. When I was doing this show last week, it was the middle of an ice storm. I thought I might lose power at any given moment. Today, it's a balmy 13 degrees Celsius. And no, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. My name is Harley R. Padgett. This is Talking Honor, the PW Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. If you missed last week's show, Lola Bradbury is no longer my co-host on this show. She had to step down due to time constraints, a bunch of other things. So last week, this week, next week, we're doing a series of guest co-hosts. I spent the day wandering the halls of the Pro Wrestling Torch office building located at the corner of 6th and Main. And I found two gentlemen who were just hanging out in the hall at the water cooler looking to talk about wrestling. So I'm joined first by Rich Fan. Rich, tell the folks who you are.
Sure. I am currently a live cast host on Saturdays. I do a show called The Deep Dive, where we dive into one subject a week really deep for an hour. And I also do the East Coast Cast VIP on Wednesday nights with my host, Travis Martin. Travis Bryant.
Okay. And also joining us, he is making his second appearance on this program, as he previously filled in for Lola a week when she was had other issues. So welcome back, Tom Staup.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling in to file a complaint with the Pro Shop. I haven't received my refrigerator magnet yet after I wasn't able to watch Supercard. Did I call the right number?
Yeah, I... Let's not get into that, because I've had my own issues. We could do a whole episode just about ROH customer support.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm glad that they at least gave something to us, even though it cost $8.25 in shipping. But anyway, yes, I also do the PWT Talks NXT podcast on Wednesdays with one Harley R. Padgett, you may have heard of him, and a couple other blokes. And I cover NXT tapings and MLW tapings for the Torch. So that's my deal. Oh, and I might mention that if you missed the last time I was on this podcast, my sort of angle here is that I didn't used to watch Ring of Honor before the last time I was on this podcast. So I've been keeping up with it since then, you know, the whole 3 weeks. But I'm still coming in from that like fresh eyes perspective.
There you go. So this is episode number 13 of Talking Honor, and in honor of unlucky number 13, we got a recap episode of ROH television this week. I was all excited to finally get some post-Supercard of Honor television, some new developments, some furthering of stories, and that was not on the cards. Instead, we got the three women's matches that aired at Supercard of Honor 2 weeks ago. So the two semifinal matches, the finals of the tournament. We got to see Sumi Sakai become the first Women of Honor champion again. Good stuff, but I'd like to imagine anyone listening to this show probably saw Supercard of Honor. So it's kind of, you know, especially with Honor Club now, it felt a little bit redundant. I understand in the days, even like a year ago, this would have been cool because you pay $40 for pay-per-view. Not everybody can do that for every pay-per-view, so getting some matches on TV, great. But in the days of Honor Club, when it's $10 for a membership per month, I don't know. I'd like to imagine, had you guys both seen these matches in their entirety already?
Yes. And I had not, actually, since I had issues connecting to Supercard. Once I finally got the stream working, it was actually right at the end of the finals. So in that regard, I was happy to have an easy way to watch them again.
Okay, so there you go. Maybe I'm being too hard. Not only are there people who watch ROH TV but haven't bought Honor Club, there are people who bought Honor Club and couldn't get it to work. And there are, unfortunately, a lot of those people, from judging by social media. But anyway, so we got the finals of the tournament. We got to see these matches again. Rich, I will start with you. What were your thoughts on the overall Women of Honor tournament and the finals in particular? I was very, when I've said on the show before, when they announced the tournament, day one, I said Deonna Purrazzo is going to win. She's going to be the first champion. When Tennille Dashwood joined the company, I said, well, she's definitely going to make it to the finals. And I was wrong on both counts.
I was very, and I think we talked about it a little when we were talking with Sean Redican, who I also do Redican Worldwide with. Worldwide, if I can borrow Titus. I was underwhelmed. I assumed, much like yourself, it would be either Deonna or at least once they put in Tennille, they'd go with Tennille with the XWE or yada yada. Going with Sumi, I was fine with it, but it just, I felt like the match didn't, it didn't do much for me. I wanted more, and it was very underwhelming, and I was very disappointed, and I'm a little worried at her reign starting off on such a rocky start, to be quite frank.
That was the thing that I noticed too, watching back these three matches on TV last night. All three matches were less than 9 minutes each, and I couldn't help but think, wow, that's probably the least amount of wrestling there's ever been on a weekly hour of ROH television. Usually, you know, an hour of TV minus commercials is 42 minutes. With ROH, you're probably getting like close to half an hour, 35 minutes of wrestling on an average week. This episode, we got less than half an hour total because these matches were so short. And the finish to the final match, it didn't look any better to me the second time I watched it. I don't know what was happening there. Sumi won with a DDT on Kelly Klein, but it was very awkward. It seemed to be some sort of miscommunication. Yeah, and that really deflated the ending of the tournament for me. I don't know. Tom, what were you thinking?
Yeah, no, I definitely got the same impression from that final match. I think as a whole, after the Mae Young Classic strengthened my passion for wrestling, particularly the women's wrestling that I do gravitate toward, I very much appreciated seeing other similar tournaments either gaining more publicity or popping up entirely anew, like this one. So conceptually, I'm glad this happened, and I'm especially glad, just as the May did, that it introduced me to some notable wrestlers that I had never heard of before, particularly Mayu Iwatani. You know, her match with it was Deonna Purrazzo, right? I have that side of the bracket right. I think it was Iwatani and Purrazzo.
Yeah, she had one match with Purrazzo, and then she lost to Kelly Klein on this week's team.
Right. And I really, as we talked about, I really enjoyed that match with Purrazzo, and I very much enjoyed her match with Klein. It was pretty much an offensive showcase for Iwatani to the point where it seemed totally unrealistic that Klein could continue to kick out, let alone win the match in the end. But I still was really into what Iwatani was doing. So I was happy that this introduced me to her. And in the end, even though I agree that I was surprised with who ended up in the finals, it kind of seemed like Ring of Honor was looking at several desirable options, and they just had to go with one. So I was a little bit underwhelmed at the very end, but I mean, I would have been happy with multiple results, and I'm just glad that it happened at all. So it didn't really the my indifference to the final result didn't really dampen my appreciation of it.
Yeah, I suppose there were a significant number of positive ways this could have gone. Like, we are on board with Deonna having winning it, or Tennille. Kelly Klein even wouldn't have been a terrible decision. She's the strongest heel in the division at this point. And I'm certainly not against Sumi Sakai winning. She's on paper, you'd think, okay, she's 46 years old. She's been wrestling for 21 years. And they're putting the championship on her. But at no point in the tournament, in any of her matches, can I think where I could look at her match and go, yeah, she's 46, you can tell. She's slow in the ring, she's whatever. No, she is as good as any of these other women in the ring, for sure. And the story of Sumi Sakai won the very first women's match in ROH history way back June 2002, 16 years ago. So, you know, I'm a sucker for the poetry of stuff like that. I like that. In the record books, you're always going to have only one first champion. And maybe that's part of it too. I was thinking last night, is you go back, if listeners can do this in their free time, go back and look at the Wikipedia page for the list of former ROH world champions. And it's a who's who, top names in independent wrestling. Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Austin Aries, Low-Key, it's Roderick Strong, Adam Cole, Jay Lethal. It's just name after name. And so maybe ROH kind of had that impression of, we want that first champion ever to be somebody that we know 10 years from now, 16 years from now, we can stand behind. We'll always be proud that Sumi Sakai was the first champion, whereas who knows where some of these other women might be 2-3 years from now.
Right. There's definitely something to that. Whereas my kind of going into the finals, I was thinking, you know, again, I wasn't able to watch it live, but, you know, following along with the results, I was thinking, OK, this has to go to Klein because they're going to, and they even ended up having so many other baby faces around the ring. I was thinking they were going to put it on her because I would agree that in the little that I've seen her, she has done some strong heel work, particularly in the pre-taped promos that they show before her matches. And then you have this litany of wrestlers that are ready to challenge her for it. And you can build up the division around this sort of unstoppable heel. And actually, as a detail added to that, am I correct in my interpretation that that was actually Klein's first loss?
The story that they've told for her character is she was unpinned and unsubmitted in 2 years.
Okay.
But there were tons of extenuating circumstances. We saw in the tournament itself, she tapped out to Mandy Leone, referee yes. didn't see it. That kind of thing, right? Classic yep. heel 101. Okay, so Sumi Sakai is our first champion now. That's in the record books. Nothing's going to change that. Rich, how long does Sumi hold on to the title?
I think it goes into a conversation we'll have later. Depending on how they arrange these tapings and the next big shows, I could say she'd last as long as 6 months to a year to basically the equivalent of the next round of tapings, depending if they bring someone in or they have an idea that they really just wanted to get off the ground through the tapings and not through a big show. I'm looking at the Ring of Honor champions because when you said that, it struck something in my head. This is about the time in Ring of Honor's history when they brought in Morishima and he won the world title, but he had been in wrestling for like the better part of 5 years. At this point, Sumi Sakai getting it at 15, comparing like men to women, it's going to be really interesting to me because is Sumi Sakai going to be the first champion and also carry the banner of I can innovate like the first champions of the men's side did? Because that's a dangerous game to play given her age and her injuries. I don't want her to kind of burn herself out trying to prove a point, if that makes sense. So I'm hoping it's 6 months to a year, but I'm feeling like it's probably going to be more 3 to 5 months, maybe shorter.
Yeah, see, I can see it go either way. And I always say I like that unpredictability in wrestling. I like not knowing for sure how things are going to go. My gut, I guess, is leaning towards this being a short reign for her. Maybe Kelly Klein steals it in a month or two. Maybe something happens. Maybe someone like Tennille Dashwood turns heel because I don't know. I still think they want the championship to be on a more recognizable name outside of ROH, I guess. Deonna's big on the indies. Tennille obviously has the WWE rub. So I could see them wanting to put the title on one of them. It's also a question, but I don't know. Are they going to appear on television on a regular basis? Are they going to get to actually have feuds and stories in the same way that the six-man titles do and the television title does? Or are we going to go back to just Women of Honor Wednesdays on YouTube? That's the big thing, I guess, because if they're not on television in a regular way, how can we have proper feuds and stories?
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force. Powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conference and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say, this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
I don't know. Tom, your thoughts on how long Sumi Sakai holds on to the title and possible challengers? You're not too familiar with the division, but you've got the tournament participants is basically the extent of the division.
Right. Yeah, and your thought that Klein might swoop in and find some way to get that title around her waist in short order was something that definitely occurred to me as well. I'm glad you went with Rich first, because of course he's much more versed in Sakai. I'm very unfamiliar with her, so I'm not really sure what I don't know what would go into the details of this, but I guess I would hope that they would give their first champion at least a few months with it. But kind of like I was saying, that I thought that they would give it to Klein to build around her to begin with. Maybe they can have their cake and eat it too by getting this feel good win, but then, you know, having Klein come in and take it and then building around her. Because as I was looking around that ring during that final match, I'm just seeing babyface. Or he could do something crazy and put it around Brandi Rhodes. So as far as the division, though, I mean, it was a little off-putting that so many of the matches were presented as mere highlight packages in the early parts of the tournament. I mean, I suppose this pertains to the specifics of Ring of Honor's overseas partnerships, but still, I kind of went into it excited to see some women's wrestling, and there were just highlight reels. I do have hope, however, that there's a solid place for Women of Honor moving forward, and that's based on the fact that they did just take up this entire week's episode showing viewers the tournament matches that were originally behind that paywall that we talked about, and some of us who were paying for it didn't even get to see it, because if they had to do a recap episode, they could have just as easily shown whatever Hangman Page was up to, or they could have shown highlights from the ladder match or whatever they wanted to give away for free. And they chose to build an entire show around making sure that people got an opportunity to see their top women do what they can do. So I don't know. Fingers crossed that goes forward, although, and this is extremely tangential, so stop me if you must, but I also wonder how bad is it really to have a division that is, if not exclusive, but at least primarily on YouTube. Because for me, I mean, granted, they don't have the notoriety of Ring of Honor, but there are a lot of wrestling promotions that I only follow on YouTube. And they'll put up matches, you know, sometimes matches that happened like 2 years ago. But that's my only real way of finding out about them and watching them. And they get some pretty good traction. And I find out about a lot of new wrestlers that way. So maybe that's just me. But I also feel like YouTube and other streaming services or like, you know, free tube sites like that may have something to them, and especially when someone like me who is trying to figure out how to watch Ring of Honor, it was a bit of a challenge before I found this free Charge TV website that is legal. I'll remind, it's a legal way of watching. you know, watching that on YouTube would have been a much more accessible way for me to get into Ring of Honor than, you know, finding the streaming website.
Yeah, so they do. They also do on their YouTube channel what they call Future of Honor, which is kind of the rookies from the ROH dojo, people who haven't really been established on television yet. They'll do matches from them on the YouTube channel. And that's how I like the use of something like that, that making the YouTube channel almost like the equivalent of WWF Superstars, where you get the mid-carders and the lower-carders and things like that. The problem with the women's division has been, up until the establishing of this championship, they were only on YouTube. They were never on the television, really. You'd get like one episode of TV every 6 months that was an all-women episode, but otherwise you never saw them at all during the year. And so it had that real sense of, oh, they're their separate thing. They're not good. Like, almost like they're, you know, we're putting them on the YouTube with the rookies. So it seems to be sending the message, they're not good enough to be on weekly TV with all these other guys.
At least that's the impression. Of course, yeah, I know, I get that. And of course, with the TV is a promotional tool, but you know, ever since, you know, Raw and Nitro and whatever else, it's kind of become the main flagship for promotions as well. So I definitely get that that message being sent, you know, like when you see somebody show up on Superstars and you're like, ah, that definitely tells me that they don't see them quite as highly as everyone else who doesn't have to do that.
Yeah. You're like, Primo and Epico are still under contract? What?
Those poor guys.
All right, so last question on this topic. I'll send it to Rich because you've been watching ROH for a while. Is this the beginning of a new day for the women's division? Is this the start? I mean, they spent the money to have a title belt made. That would seem to be a show of good faith, right?
I think so. And my hope is that they, and we've just been talking about it, I feel it's the YouTube factor. You need to put them on television regularly. As much as we get the views on YouTube and as much as that is a great avenue by which they can get their presence felt, being as fair to the women as you are to the men as far as television exposure, especially with a large company as big as Sinclair, is the best way to get more people involved in fandom. I know we have a relatively small roster of women at present, but I see it akin to, if they really want to put their money where their mouths are, they can turn that Women of Honor division into the equivalent of the SmackDown 6, where even though you have 6 to 8 women that you are building it around, you can be so forceful in the stories and so good with the matches that people won't care.
And they could totally, they can have their cake and eat it too. Present Sumi and Kelly feuding for the title on television, and then Women of Honor Wednesdays on YouTube could be Karen Q getting an enhancement win over somebody, or right, Mandy Leon and Deonna teaming up against, in a tag match against somebody else, right? Use it to establish maybe a secondary feud in addition to what we're getting, the main course or whatever.
Yeah. And you could feedback into it. So if you go to a pay-per-view and you have a Women of Honor match and you're like, oh man, you guys missed some great stuff. If you've been watching our YouTube channel, in addition to what you'd seen on TV, the following things happen and you have it in the package.
Exactly. See, it sounds so simple when we spell it out like this. But this kind of leads into my next topic, which came up again because I went into last night's episode of TV thinking I was getting new footage, thinking I was going to get the first episode of tapings post Supercard of Honor, and that didn't happen. So I made up a little chart of ROH's April schedule, and it's just so disjointed and odd. The way, generally speaking, the things we're seeing on television usually were recorded about a month ago, a month earlier before we see them on TV. Often they record television before pay-per-view, but then it airs after the pay-per-view. Now we're getting these new Honor Club events like Masters of the Craft and Honor Reign Supreme, which are live, so we know this is happening now, immediate. But then they're not using that to tell stories. It's more or less just a house show, match, 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 great wrestling, but no no promos, no interviews, no furthering of feuds. I mean, at this point, presumably next week we're going to get our first post-Supercard television episode. At that point, it will have been 3 weeks since Supercard. I'd have to imagine some of the goodwill built up by largest crowd in ROH history, Kenny versus Cody, Silas Young as new TV champion, etc. I feel like a little bit of it will have dissipated in the 3 weeks that it took to get follow-up to that. Do you think? I don't know, Tom?
I can definitely attest to that. I mean, I was kind of getting hyped on ROH. You got me on the train so I could do that first guest spot on Talking Honor, and it was a good timing, a really hot build for the main event scene into Supercard. And yeah, the taping schedule is definitely a one of the things that can be attributed to feeling a little bit put at arm's length by the promotion. It's kind of like, hey guys, I'm trying to be here for you. I already have a full schedule of wrestling that I watch, but I wanted to see if I could factor you in, and you're making it kind of difficult. And when I do tune in again, yes, in this case, I was appreciative of getting to see these matches. But if it was a recap of matches that I had already seen, then it would have been okay. Now I've got another 7 days before maybe we'll get some new content. Yeah, and I'm looking at my notes, and I think I might be jumping the gun on something else that you're about to get at, so I'll toss it back to you.
Okay. I'm understanding in that it takes time for any company to record a live event, do post-production, etc. NXT, same thing. They record a while ahead of time. We see it later. Lucha Underground, their new season debuts in June, and they already taped all of that a while ago. So, you know, it's television. No, you're not watching any TV show and seeing, hey, that was made like a week ago. That's the nature of the beast. And ROH is getting better. There was, Tom, this time last year, once Supercard was over, the next 2 weeks of TV would have been literally footage from 6 months ago. It would have been, hey, here's a live event we did last winter, and we're just doing this on television to fill in the gaps while we wait for new footage. So it's better.
Yeah, you've really got to love it to stay in line with that.
It is getting better, right? We got the Gauntlet match last week. It established new number one contenders for the Briscoes, things like that. So it is improving, but it's still this, you know, April 16th episode of TV was recorded on March 10th, 5 weeks before it actually aired. The next week's episode that we'll finally get, April 30th, that's 2 weeks behind when it was taped. We're having Bound by Honor next weekend. We had Masters of the Craft after Supercard, but no follow-up from Supercard. I still don't know where anything stands with Bullet Club or who's in charge. Is it? I find it makes it difficult to tell stories if all the chapters, you know, Try telling a story when you're writing chapter 6 of the book, then chapter 4, and presenting to the audience chapter 5, 7, and 9 before they get chapters 1 and 6, right? Like, it's not some cool David Lynch purposeful thing where we're supposed to be confused and it's all, I don't know. Rich, take over. What are your thoughts? I'm flustered.
Well, for me, it's fine. It's fine, Harley. I look at it like I look at NXT. The worst thing you can do is set up a situation where back in the old days where you would have a title change and on WCW tapings, you have the champion defending the title. And so now with the advent of the internet, you can be on Twitter saying, oh, my God, I just went to this taping. And, you know, will you sue me? Sumi Sakai lost the title to Deonna Purrazzo, and you'll never believe what happened. And you still haven't even seen the title win by Sumi. Instead, what they really should do, and they again, you have a multi-billion-dollar company bigger than the WWE by several tens of millions, and you have the opportunity to just set up a better schedule. If you film, you stop right before the show. If you want to do a recap show like you did this week, that's fine. But your tape-in should kick off the next set of stories post-show, and you've done it in a way where it's the week of Supercard. So Let's see. Supercard happened on, when was it? April 7th. So April 9th's television should have been a recap then. And then you have Masters of the Craft. 16th and 23rd should have been taped the week of Masters of the Craft instead of March 10th.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Yeah. So, well, now that we have these, and I've been making excuses because I know it's tough to do turnaround time and production schedules and whatever, but they have no problem doing these live events. We see them do pay-per-views. We've seen them do live events on Honor Club now, and that's instantaneous. That's the Saturday Night Live of wrestling. So why haven't we been getting more furthering of stories? What am I trying to say? Is there a reason that they couldn't turn these Honor Club live events into almost a form of TV, where you still have a lot of quality matches, but you also have feuds and promos and setting up stories? Is there a fear that there's a certain part of the audience that only watches television, not any of the Honor Club things, and they don't want to alienate those people? I feel like those people are being alienated regardless.
Well, something you see on NXT is, when developments happen after a taping and they need to address them when the episode airs, I point out NXT just because I'm most familiar with it, but I'm sure this is pretty common. Impact messes up their taping schedule a lot, so I imagine they have to do this kind of thing a lot. But they address it in the actual episode because they have time after the development to then, you know, edit what they need to out and have Mauro Ranallo go into the Performance Center or go up to, Titan Towers and say, say whatever he needs to say. And so it ends up in the actual show, even though they didn't have the foresight to predict something like whatever it is occurring at the time of the tapings. What they could do, as I remind myself where I was going with that, normally I wouldn't advocate for broadcasting standard house shows, as standard house shows are often designed to almost be like dress rehearsals for the stuff that does make air. But in this case, I might be inclined to feel that shows like Masters of the Craft should indeed be used to further storylines. Not only does Honor Club, at its like non-renewing $9.99 a month, become that much more irresistible for fans who want more consistent storytelling from one of their favorite brands. But after something like that happens, if you want to still present it to the weekly TV people, it's just as easy as clipping out whatever you want to clip out and adding it into whatever. Exactly. So the people who are only watching free still get the important developments.
And honestly, at this,
I don't think that this would be like a long-term strategy. But if they do want to grow to get to a point of like NXT's mastery of their taping schedule, if they want that, then this in the interim could help alleviate some of the growing pains.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like their first priority is making the weekly television palatable to people who just watch the weekly television. But I feel like we're already not in that state. I can't imagine how the Cody and Kenny Omega feud came across to people who just watched weekly TV and didn't watch Being the Elite and didn't follow developments over in New Japan. Because there's already, I feel like half the Supercard lineup was announced on social media and on ROHWrestling.com, not on television. By the time they got around to actually addressing these matches on TV, they acted as if we already knew that they had already been booked. I mean, what feuds are really being carried solely on ROH television. Silas and Kenny, I guess. Maybe Cody and Taven a little, but otherwise, ROH has already booked themselves into this position where you need to be following New Japan and social media and being the elite and ROH TV and watching Honor Club events in order to make sense of everything that's going on with these characters.
It's weird. It's. I mean, when you look at the plate they have set, and you guys were talking about the idea of like going to like Titan Tower with Moro, you could do something like that with Riccaboni or Riccaboni and Colt, where they're like, hey, folks, we're going to update you on some happenings going on around in our Honor Club, and you can join Honor Club by blah, 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 and off you pop, and you can show key things from the house shows. And if you can't get in for a taping, you have that interstitial period where you have quality content that isn't just what New Japan's currently doing on Access, and they're trying to improve.
They used to do this with Mandy Leone. She had Inside ROH, and every week they'd cut to her in the locker room, and she'd, hey guys, blah, 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 and then send off to a video summarizing a recent feud or developments that had happened in some capacity. And it seems simple enough.
Yeah, and that way you have the option. You can choose if you really, really love the product or if you're really intrigued by a certain storyline. You can check out New Japan. You can check out the Facebook page and ringofhonor.com. Or you can just, you know, at least you have the one source. You know that you know, Sunday night or whenever it airs for in your area for Ring of Honor TV, you know that you can tune in there and at least stay up to date and not feel like it's a chore and a scavenger hunt.
Well, so this leads into my big discussion question of the week, which is a new thing I'm trying out on Talking Honor, where we kind of talk about a topic, and we've already been talking about this, so great. The idea of crafting a professional wrestling television show, it seems these days like more or less every wrestling television show is pretty much the same. And they all bear, you can take ROH, you can take Impact Wrestling, I don't know what other American promotions have weekly TV shows, but I feel like you can take any of them and put them up against an episode of Monday Night Raw from 1993, and it's pretty much the same format. So, I don't know, we're going to be coming back to this on future episodes, because there's a lot I've been thinking about here, and I can't pull it all apart. It's all one big ball. But I'll start off with, I guess, the idea, and I'll pose it to Rich. Is a live wrestling show inherently better than a pre-taped show? Because that seems to be the consensus.
I would say, and maybe it's just my old head talking, it depends on the quality of the content you're presenting live. Because for me, in a week where I'm going to consume, even this weekend with New Japan and then Ring of Honor recaps on my Pittsburgh television here, probably somewhere like 12 to 13 hours of wrestling, I look forward to NXT most of all, even though it's a one-hour pre-taped show. And followed closely by a live New Japan, SmackDown, and then Raw. Like, Raw tonight's going to be 3 hours live, and I think Ring of Honor could do far more with their hour than WWE currently does with their three, because it gets to be a bit of a slog. So for me personally, I think if it's done right, tape can still work in 2018. It's just, again, finding that schedule sweet spot where you aren't either giving things away you don't want to talk about or putting yourself in a position where you're recapping almost a month after the event happened.
See, I agree with you in that NXT, probably my favorite hour of television right now per week and the one I look forward to the most. There was this idea before SmackDown went live, people were clamoring. We want SmackDown to be live. We want to be live every week. And WWE gave in and said, okay, we'll do it. It costs a lot more, and it's going to put a bigger strain on our travel schedule, but yeah, we'll do it. Why did people want it live so much? Was it because they were reading the spoilers ahead of time, and that made them less interested in the product? They wanted the surprises. That's a big reason the Monday Night War was so huge back in the day, right? The surprises. You don't know who's going to show up. You don't know what Stone Cold's going to do this week. You don't know what's going to happen. Now, I don't read the NXT spoilers, so I'm surprised when I watch episodes of NXT. I was surprised. I don't read the ROH spoilers either. I was surprised when Deonna lost to Mayu Iwatani in the tournament. So is that the... I don't know. Tom, are there any other advantages I'm overlooking as to why a live 2-hour SmackDown is better than a pre-taped 2-hour SmackDown?
Well, it could be subjective, but I feel like, you know, I'm not the biggest sports fan, but if I am going to watch a game of football, I have to watch it live, no matter how good it was. I'm not going to watch it after the fact. You know, it's the kind of thing where I need to be a part of it while it's happening. And if I missed it, then I missed it. And with wrestling, obviously, I care about it more that I want to experience it. So if I miss it, I'm going to watch it back later. But just for me, even though I totally agree that NXT is my favorite wrestling show out there right now, before starting to cover it for a podcast and needing to watch it when it airs for the first time, I would let it build up for a few weeks and then just binge like 2 or 3 hours of it in a sitting, because I didn't feel like it was crucial to watch it when it was new. Whereas I'll sit through however many completely unremarkable episodes of Raw and SmackDown, even if I dread them ahead of time, because it's live and I can tweet about it while it's happening. And I feel like, ooh, this is happening right now. And, you know, WWE themselves upload all the important things that happen in a Raw or SmackDown and then some interesting backstage segments that aren't as regimented on their YouTube channel. And on the days that I miss Raw and SmackDown and I watch the highlights the next day, I find myself a much happier person. But I still tune in stubbornly on Monday and Tuesday nights because it's live and it feels important and it feels like that's what I need to be doing right then as a fan of WWE's product. So, yeah, I think that's what I'm going to hover around for that. I think it's also because of that, live also ends up being more appealing to advertisers, especially in a day where there's a lot of streaming and a lot of DVRing and whatnot. Advertisers, I think, are going to spend more money to advertise on your product if they feel like you have that attraction of being live. So people are going to watch it and have to sit through all of your mattress ads.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense because, you know, I PVR a lot of shows, most of my shows, watch them the next day, don't watch a single commercial. I'm fast forwarding through every commercial break. I don't know. Television in general seems to be at this tipping point where we're moving more in that direction. It used to be back in the day, oh, you have to tune in Sunday night to watch The Simpsons because when I was in, you know, junior high, have to watch Simpsons live Sunday night because we're all going to be talking about it at lunch in the cafeteria on Monday. You have to watch the Seinfeld finale live. It's the Seinfeld finale. It's the last one. Now we're at the point where, hey, here's all 13 new episodes of Jessica Jones on Netflix. Watch them when you want.
Right. And even if that is going to tip, which is easily presumable, it definitely hasn't quite tipped yet, which might make the live attraction that much more important because they need something to hang on to.
And wrestling is this weird wrestling television in particular is this weird beast. You made the sports comparisons before, and I'm totally with you on that. I'm a huge Toronto Blue Jays fan. But if I'm not watching the game live, I'm not interested. I don't want to watch yesterday's game or a game from last year. But wrestling is this weird thing where it's kind of sports-like, but it's also got those characters and those stories where I feel like it's much closer to something like a Marvel series. It's more. I always compare wrestling to superheroes.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So my other thing with moving away from live versus pre-taped, we'll settle on ROH is going to be pre-taped. They're not going to be doing a live weekly television show anytime soon. They're pre-taped, done. Are they making full use of the fact that they are pre-taped? Because we watch these shows, an hour of weekly television that was taped a month earlier, and there's not really much done in post-production. They have the cameras in the arena, and pretty much everything takes place in the arena with a couple of backstage promos. Otherwise, it's more or less, you know, the night of the tapings. It seems like they hit play at the start, they hit stop after an hour passes, and then they send that to the network to air. They're not adding in a lot of stuff in post-production, which I really feel like they could be. I think particularly about something NXT has done really well, the videos on Roderick Strong and TM61. They were long, longer than you would want an audience in an arena to sit and be watching a video on a Titantron. But because they were added in post-production, they were great. And they were nice. They changed up the weekly TV in that way, where we got variety on our television. And I don't think anybody was bored. I don't think anybody was watching that Roderick Strong video package and going like, all right, just shut up. Hurry up and get to a match. I just want to see more whatever. Because we were invested. Rich, your thoughts on all of that. Post-production stuff. What could be added afterwards? And what could be... What are some benefits or some opportunities, I should say, that pre-taped wrestling provides?
I think for them, especially because they want to keep costs down, I see no indications that Sinclair wants to invest more money to the point where live taping, as we mentioned, would be viable. So utilizing that post-production, utilizing the Honor Club, I mean, to me, it makes sense. If you're treating this as a WWE Network adjacent programming package, you should maximize the minutes that you have it on air. You should maximize the amount that you're pushing people back to the product. And you should make a synchronicity between all of those things so that you feel a natural need to use it, not something that, you know, crashes and becomes this thing like an albatross around your neck. Ugh, I gotta watch on Honor Club. You know, it's kind of like toward the tail end when I was watching Evolve shows, and every now and then WWN would crash, and I'm like, come on, guys, it's like it's the same thing. At some point, buy the server. And so Ring of Honor shouldn't be, if they want to be the number two promotion in North America, they have to act like it. And there are very easy fixes we've mentioned this evening that could get them there.
My thing with I already warn you, listeners, we're definitely coming back to this on a future episode. But I feel like there's so much more that could be done with the writing and the art of pro wrestling that isn't. Every promotion is more or less the same format, and it's pretty much the same format that wrestling had in the 60s and the 70s. You got your matches, you got your promos, where the wrestler either talks about himself or talks about his opponent, and you have the interviews, and that's the bulk of the content. But why... I don't know. Stick a pin in that. The two things that have most intrigued me about pro wrestling, the biggest developments in the last couple of years, and made me really like, this is cool, this is new and different, being the Elite and Matt Hardy's Broken Universe in TNA. Broken Universe had me watching TNA wrestling for the first time in years, solely for Matt Hardy and that. I YouTubed and binged every single segment in the history of the Broken Universe, because I thought, this is so cool and so different. Being the Elite, same thing. I watched two episodes, became hooked, went back and watched every episode from the beginning. I've watched all 100 episodes through now. Both of those add to the actual in-ring wrestling, right? They make you care more about the characters, about the promotion in general. And I feel like the key that I'm stressing with these two is super cheap and affordable. Being the Elite is Matt and Nick Jackson with handheld cameras filming themselves and their friends in the locker room and at airports. The Broken Universe, you know, they made use of what they had. They needed a setting, so they went to Matt's house. They needed some cast members, so they got his wife and his father-in-law. They looked around at what they had. Hey, we have an old boat lined by a lake. Hey, we've got a lawnmower. All right, let's use it.
I love that subjectively. And that, you know, it does come down to subjectivity and what individual people are going to like. I also loved The Broken Universe, even though I wasn't same story as you. I tuned in and I went through everything because I found it fascinating. And the resourcefulness and the frugality reminded me of my own short filmmaking, because I'll do the same thing. And I'm just like, all right, I got a cheap camera and I don't have too much else money, too much else as far as a budget goes. So I let me just look around and try to piece something together out of what I have. And I loved those. But then again, this is it's all based on opinion. You get something like Lucha Underground that is trying to be creative and do something that's more in a novella style and do some backstage stuff that's filmed a little bit more like a movie or a TV show. And Harley, I know last time you and I talked about Lucha Underground the other day, I said that I hadn't seen any episodes yet, but us talking about it got me to go and watch a couple. And again, it's just my opinion, but, and as a film school graduate, I should be able to more specifically describe what I'm about to get at here, but Lucha Underground's production values, to me, cause it to come off more akin to something like American Gladiator or American Ninja Warrior, even worse, one of those like Nickelodeon obstacle course shows from the early 90s. There's just something in the way that they put together the show that feels inherently cheap. I wish I knew how to describe it better. If naming off all those other shows that it reminded me of helps, it felt like that. It's like when SmackDown first, when they reintroduced the brand split a couple of years ago and they wanted SmackDown to look different, and they introduced a jib cam that hovered around the ring, and there was just something about it that made it look lesser. I don't know. So I feel like, again, it all comes down to opinion, but the deletions were a great way to exhibit or to experiment with the potential of pro wrestling beyond the sports-like setting of something like Mid-South, which is a comfort zone for me. And you could do something like that, like Jim Cornette reviving it in the 90s with Smoky Mountain, and it's I'm going to enjoy that. Or you can do something wild like Lucha Underground, and it appeals to a lot of people, but for me, it didn't quite work, and I would prefer something that more like Ring of Honor, that is trying to, if they're not explicitly trying to evoke wrestling that we're familiar with from the most recent boom period in the late 90s, it at least is rooted in that to a point where somebody could tune in who maybe remembers Austin versus McMahon, but then they stopped watching, and they could go, oh yeah, pro wrestling, I remember this stuff, maybe I'll give it another shot. So even though it's easy to say that shows that that are pre-taped want to be more like WWE, I'm not sure if that's entirely the case. You know, I'm kind of going off on a different subject here, but like sticking to the traditional presentation, a lot of people that tune in don't realize, and I'm speaking from personal experience before I realized that some of these like Impact, that I didn't realize that they were taped for quite a while, after I thought they had gone live at some point in their tenure. When I started watching them again in 2013, I didn't realize that they were tapings. And so I think there are probably other people out there that tune in and don't realize that it's not live. So if they do too much that gives away that it's not live, I wonder if that takes away from it. I know I just said a whole lot that's like, I reached out in a lot of different directions there, but
like I said, this is a big conversation to be had in one episode. Yeah. I think just trying to bring it back to my original germ of the thing I've been mulling over is just, you can look at, oh, it's pre-taped and these matches took place in front of a crowd a month ago, and therefore they have a weakness compared to the immediacy of a live event where we don't know what the next match is going to be. We don't know who's going to come out of that curtain, what's going to happen. But because it's pre-taped, I just think it doesn't have to be as off script or as creatively different as a Lucha Underground or a Broken Universe. I just think that there's an opportunity to do lots of extra things, like being the Elite. Being the Elite's almost the opposite of Lucha Underground. It's very realistic. You know, these are the guys at restaurants, in hotel rooms, whatever. It's very down to earth. I don't know. Maybe I just want like a wrestling sitcom. Maybe that's what it comes down to for me. I watch a lot of sitcoms, and I just want like The Office, but then with wrestling matches in between. Why not?
Yeah, why not? It's yeah.
I don't know. Rich, final thoughts on this topic before we wrap it up for today.
Well, I was thinking about, especially when you were mentioning, you both were mentioning Lucha Underground. I enjoy Lucha Underground for the insanity, and I also enjoy it because when I look at NXT and I see Kairi Sane, and then I see her as this happy pirate princess, and then you look at Lucha Underground and she's this crazy dark ninja woman that shows up for this short period of time, it's jarring because it's like seeing my favorite actor in a movie role I never expected them in. So I'm grateful for the Lucha Underground to have things like that, so I can go one step beyond where I'm comfortable and kind of deal with it. But in my week-to-week watching, I would rather it be something where it is a competitive, you figure out they're fighting for championships, they're fighting for pride. If there is a reason behind someone having a feud, you learn it on the show. And I don't have to deal with a timeless witch or a murderer slash wrestler, you know, at least fictitionally, I hope. And that sort of stuff is just, you know, like I said, it's fun to dabble with, but it isn't something I would want in my wrestling by and large. And I think they're really not taking advantage. I was just thinking when you mentioned the surprise of the matches, they could have the match where they're all, you know, as my one friend would say, cattywampus, and it's all over the place during the tapings. And then the way they edit it, you would never know what was taped when. And I think that would be a really good thing. That's an easy way to freshen up the tapings.
Oh, tape two matches on two separate dates with the same opponents, and you show the beginning of one half, the beginning half of one, the ending half of the other. You splice it together. You trick people into thinking it's one match. You do something like that, people are going to lose their minds and be like, this is ridiculous. This is like blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. It could work under the right circumstances.
The Mandela.
Well, I mean, they did
wrestling.
That. If you look at the Mae Young Classic, that happened with a couple of matches in the middle rounds where there was an injury. I mean, Kairi Sane got a concussion, and then they had to kind of work around it with the taping. So they filmed one part of a match and left it out and went to another that they'd film later that day. That would be fun. Now, if you did it days apart, that would be pretty weird because it'd be like, hey, where did that guy go? And where did there's going to be that person that gets the screen caps, and it's like, this person's eating an ice cream, and 2 seconds later, there's another person there.
You do
what's
it on
going?
Purpose. The one guy's tights change from blue to red in the middle of the match.
Oh my gosh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I got to see the Mae Young Classic live, and they must have done a really good job. I know they presented some of the matches in a different order in the rounds, but they must have done a really good job of covering that up. And that's one of the things I've talked about it on PWT Talks NXT with the NXT tapings, that they will purposefully not show you some stuff, possibly because it's not taped yet. But I feel like a large part of it is that, you know, people like me who do the reports, I can't tell you the whole story because they don't show you the whole story. Right. You know, they're at the most recent tapings. There was a kind of a happy-go-lucky wrestler who came out for a match looking all dour and not playing to the crowd, and they looked very upset. And I have no idea why. So whenever that airs, it'll probably have a couple of backstage things that lead up to it, and then I'll understand. But all I could write in my report was that wrestler didn't seem happy when normally they're all jumping around and happy. So. Yeah.
Well, listeners, I'm sure we just talked about a lot there, a lot of different threads, a lot of all over the place. I'm sure you have thoughts. Send us your thoughts. I'll pass them on to these two because they won't be here next week. But send me your thoughts. What am I doing? Wrong show, Tom. You got me all flustered.
We're one day early.
TalkingHonor@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter @TalkingHonor. Send me your thoughts on pre-tape versus live and other things other things wrestling, any pro wrestling promotion, some things they could be doing that are new and different that they're not, and why aren't they? And just babble on, because we did, and I won't hold it against you. Tom, where can I find you?
I just remembered that I was going to bring up Vader's White Castle of Fear when we were talking about different ways to tell stories, and I was going to try to relate it to maybe they could show Kairi on a pirate ship, but knowing the general opinion of Vader's White Castle of Fear, maybe it's best that I didn't get into that. I am, if you want to talk about Vader's White Castle of Fear, I am on Twitter at Tom Stoup. That's TOMSTOUP.
And Rich, where can they find you?
Well, if they're so inclined, on Twitter, I am at Rich_FANN. And anywhere you get your regular Torch entertainment, I will probably be a Jace. Laughing maniacally.
There you go. Next week, nothing announced for next week's episode of ROH Television. I'm hoping it's finally the first post-Supercard tapings. I don't know. But I'll be back next week with two more special guest co-hosts as I figure out where this show is going. Because, listeners, sometimes I don't know.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
No.